Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Jessica Bell took a roundabout way to marrying her passion for wine with her career. Bell studied economics at Duke and worked as a successful investment banker in New York City before what she describes as a quarter-life crisis led her to move to Spain and to work at a winery.
Years later, wine has become her professional life. She teaches, she blogs about it, she runs a wine school in Milwaukee, and she's also launching a new business venture, making disposable wine glasses. We'll have more about that later. But Jessica Bell joins us in the studio first to talk about this winding path that she's taken and what keeps her interested.
You constantly are learning. It's a never-ending journey to know more about wine. And I was really intrigued by that and loved it. And I speak Spanish. I love languages. I love history. I love culture. I love going out to dinner. Wine takes everything I love and just puts it into one field.
I love the academic idea of it because I think one of the things about wine, which is probably both exciting and scary for people, is that there is a lot of science to it. There's a lot of academic research and thought that has to go into making good wine.
Definitely. And there's not only the academic, which I really enjoy. I've always enjoyed school. My husband gives me a hard time about it, but I really enjoy studying and learning. But then there's that practical application. So you learn about different grapes and how soils affect it and climate and, you know, geology, geography, all this stuff. And then you get to taste it in the glass. And it's just this instant gratification when you take a sip and you're like, I can taste these things I just learned about in the glass. And then, you know, you're always surrounded by other people with, you know, wine's never any fun by yourself. But I mean, usually not. But
no, usually not.
So, yeah, I loved that academic element to it. But then the practical application of it was just so fulfilling to me. And then, like I've alluded to, that bringing together of people, all that together, it just made it a natural fit for me. So I was in New York first and working in investment banking and decided I wanted to move to Spain. And the idea was for just a year. And that was to go teach English and then go back to business school, you know, get serious again right after taking a year off. And 1 year pretty quickly turned into 2 years. And I deferred my admission to Columbia Business School and instead decided to work for a winery. And it wasn't like I said, a straight and clear path at first. I just knew I wanted to get into wine. When I first arrived in Spain, I was just enamored with their wine culture because at the time, this was back in 2003, it was very different than the American wine culture, which tended at that time to reserve wine for special occasions, to elevate it. It's usually fairly expensive. Whereas in Spain, when I got there, you'd get a glass of wine for under a euro, and it was an everyday thing.
Oh, it's cheaper than water.
Yeah. And, you know, and everyone drank it. And although they elevated it, it was so approachable at the same time. And I loved that. At the time, there wasn't a ton of Spanish wine in America. And so I was like, oh, I want to share this. I want to show everyone these wonderful wines and this culture that goes with it. And so the first idea I had was I'm going to import Spanish wines. So that's where I really started. And I just talked to everyone I knew in Spain and eventually met a gentleman who owned a winery. And because of my finance background, they needed my finance expertise to help them with the winery. And that's really how I got my foot in the door in Spain, started working for a winery, not necessarily in the vineyard, but in their finance office.
In the business side of it.
Yeah, and there was only two of us on the business side. So we would do finance, but we would also be the people who would take the visitors out to the winery and, you know, give them a nice lunch and take them around the winery. So I was at the winery probably at least once a week. The winery was based just outside of Madrid and then the offices were in Madrid. So it was a perfect fit. I couldn't have imagined a better fit for me.
So that, I assume, led you to my wine school here. Yeah. It's been, what, 10 years?
Yeah. So what happened was, staying in the same vein as, oh, I'm going to be an importer, I said, okay, I pitched to that winery. I said, listen, I'm going to go back to New York. I'm going to take your wines with me. Hire me as your broker. This is how I'm going to get in the door for importing wine. So I did that. They said, sure, let's do it. So I went back to New York and realized pretty quickly, New York, when you're not making a lot of money, is a very different place than when you're in investment banker. I loved it still, but I was working my tail off and not getting anywhere. Started picking up more wines and then was like, I need to get a job. Yeah, like this isn't
I have
pain.
To eat.
Right, exactly.
The wine is great.
Right.
But, yeah.
Only goes so far when you're hungry. And so I actually got a job first as helping with a wine program at a restaurant in Brooklyn called Marlow & Sons. I love it. Still love it. But then I pretty quickly thereafter, it's kind of a funny story, but I got hired at Danny Meyer's brand new top of the line restaurant called The Modern. And I always tell the story. I went in for an interview and I got this interview by, you know, a friend of a friend. And they're like, you have no fine dining experience. And I was like, guilty, I have none. And they're like, sorry, this is top of the line. This is, you know, we can't, you know. And I was like, no, listen, you give me a shot and I will prove it to you. I will do this. Wow. I didn't get the job. And they hired someone else. They told me they hired someone else. But then I guess 3 weeks later, the guy they hired maybe knew a lot, but he was not a nice person. And so he got fired and they brought me on, I think, just in complete desperation. And I really started at, they said they were going to start you at minimum wage. I was running waters. I was not doing much with wine and just being ripped apart by this woman I now love. But she was, I mean, my superiors were fierce and not unforgiving rather. But it was the best boot camp I've ever had. So I worked there. And
so what did that teach you about wine that you didn't know before?
Oh, I thought I knew so much about wine before I started working there. I knew nothing. And I had started also when I moved back to New York, started studying with the Wine and Spirit Education Trust. And I've worked with them for years and, you know, eventually got what's called the Diploma in Wine and Spirits. And right now I'm the only one in Wisconsin with that. I'm happy to say I think Jacqueline Stewart is going to get it soon. But so I just want to give her kudos.
You won't be
no,
the only
I'm
one,
glad. Right? I want to have a partner in crime. So I was studying that. So I thought I knew everything. And, you know, I think the more you know about wine, the more you realize you don't know anything. And anyone who thinks they know everything about wine doesn't know anything yet. I learned so much. Within 9 months, I was making very good money. I waited on Danny Meyer's, and he said he called me a rising star in the company. And at the time, also, the restaurant was the best new restaurant in America by James Beard. So, you know, we were really top of the line. And it was such a learning experience. And I always look back on it with fondness. Not that I ever want to go back to it.
It's like, been there, done that.
Right.
Have the T-shirt.
Right,
yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so then I was doing that, and then I got an offer to get back to what I initially set out to do, which was importing wine. And I started working with a small boutique importer, and he said, I'll bring on your wines if you help me sell the wines. So I said, okay, and started doing that. And things were going pretty well, you know, and then everything changed because love, you know.
It does tend to do that, yeah.
So my husband, he and I have known each other since we were four, and shortly after our 10-year reunion, we reconnected, and we tried to do the long-distance thing, but it's just, you know, we knew it was time, and all of our families lived here. So I said, you know, I'll move back. And we said, if it doesn't work, we'll go back to New York. So I moved here, not really sure what to do, but started working with a place called Grapes and Grains that's now no longer there, and just fell into this wine education thing. They're like, why don't you take on the tasting room? And it's just like such a logical fit now. I've always loved to teach. I've always been a teacher, and I've always enjoyed it. And
that academic interest,
yes,
coming back. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I taught English in Spain, and I've always been a tutor. I just really love it. And then wine. And it just, people could sense my passion, you know, because I was so excited to do it. And then it was just a very organic growth. It was like, well, I want to go bigger than just Grapes and Grain Room. I'm going to start doing it all over Milwaukee. And then soon it was in Chicago. And then, you know, I was doing the accreditation courses and enthusiast classes, all types of classes, private tastings, corporate events.
So can you teach somebody to taste well?
You know, I always say I don't think I'm a great taster, but because I've practiced so much and I've learned so much about it, I'm clearly, you know, good what I do. You know, I've been in it for a while. And I think it's just with anything. I've come across so many tasters, and I probably have taught thousands of people now. And some people just have this natural ability to taste. It's really extraordinary. I am not one of them. But what I always tell people is that with wine, what's so important is to taste to be helpful to you. So that's great when people can say, oh, it smells like roasted coffee beans from Colombia, or I don't know what, you know, something specific. It's really a beautiful thing that they can do. But if it's not helpful to you, it doesn't do anything, you know, except just show people you can do something. And so I always tell people, figure out why you want to learn how to taste and then use it. And I always tell people what we're doing is we're putting words to very subjective feelings and experiences. And what we're trying to do is relate it to one another so that we can share the experience.
I was thinking as you were talking about that, like some people love cilantro and some people can't stand it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same herb. And I imagine wine is the same way. Something that might taste fabulous to me may not taste good to you.
Right. And what I also tell people is there's taste and preference, and then on the other end, there's quality. And there are some rather objective ways you can measure quality. And so I always tell people, drink what you like and enjoy it. But try everything, you know, because you never know what you're going to like. But just because a wine is deemed as high quality doesn't mean you're going to like it. It's different. Preference and quality are different. Now, that said, you know, more people probably like a really nice steak over sometimes a hamburger, but sometimes you just want a hamburger, right? So it's
nothing wrong with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and so there's nothing to be ashamed of if you don't like a high quality wine or you prefer a quote unquote lower quality or lesser expensive wine. But I always tell people when you're tasting, just start by keeping it simple. So you can look at it and say, does this have fruit, earth, or spice? You know, and then that way it takes this pressure off of trying to write a sonnet about your wine and then detracting from enjoying it, really. And why you would want to know if it's fruit, earth, or spice is, do you enjoy fruit in your wine? Do you like a spice? You know, and then you can get more specific with acid and tannins, but you build that knowledge just like you would build any kind of set of experiences and knowledge.
Who are the kinds of folks that you are teaching all of this to here?
I, over the years, have taught everyone from some of Chicago's top sommeliers to, you know, Milwaukee's wine stars, you know, people who own wine stores all over the city, to just everyday people who just want to have a night out and be enlightened, you know, or to try wine and enjoy it. So I really tailor all my classes and the experiences based on the audience and what I feel like they're seeking. And people say, "Wow, you must be so annoyed. Everyone was talking the whole time." I'm like, "No, it's Friday night. I just gave them 6 glasses of wine. Like, of course
if they weren't
right,
talking,
yeah, I gotta expect that, you know. Whereas if they're paying, you know, $1,500 for a class and they're talking, then I'm going to have a different attitude because other people in that class have paid $1,500 and they're there for a very academic experience. So we're going to have a different experience. You know, and that's what I think why I'm good at being a teacher is because that's what I am. I really feel like I was born to be a teacher more than anything. And so I do think I do that well. I'm almost a teacher before I'm a wine person. I just happen to teach wine.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah. No, I have no complaints.
Well, your business side comes out again, too. But not only do you have this successful, you know, decade-long business, but you're also an entrepreneur in that you are inventing things to do with wine. And that's the thing that you have brought. It's in the bag.
It is.
We'll have a picture of this on the website.
Okay.
But describe, if you would, what it is and why you thought this was a necessary thing to have.
So, you know, it's funny. I've been in the wine industry for like over a decade, and I have never thought of this before. And yet it's a problem that I've experienced but never thought for a solution. And I say that I really would never have had this idea without my son because what happened was actually Kyle, one of your regular guests, he asked me to talk at the Home and Garden Show, but they didn't have glassware. And my son was really young. I think he was 3 months old maybe. And I was just exhausted, and I was like, I'm not carrying my glassware there and washing it, and I'm not serving wine in Dixie cups. So there's got to be a better way. There's got to be something in the middle that's disposable, that's, you know, but the right shape, the right – it's going to make people feel like they're drinking wine, but I don't have to spend all this money. And it just wasn't – it just didn't exist. And on top of that frustration and that need for simplicity as a new mom – I also was nursing at the time, so I had a lot of time to sit there and, you know, think. And so the combination of those two things really allowed what I call Halo Vino to be born. And what I've later realized is that it's a concept that's hit the market just right. I really think we have what's called a casual sophisticated culture arise in this trend, and it's not just with wine. It's our desire to go to a, you know, really nice restaurant in our jeans, to go grab an amazing coffee coffee at the local cafe. You know, all these luxuries that are just so accessible. Wine is in that same area right now. And so we want to drink wine at the stadiums. We want to drink wine at the concerts, at the pool, all these places.
And are allowed to. Now.
We're allowed to.
Right.
Yeah.
That's changed too.
And it's available. But we have the packaging and the delivery system hasn't caught up yet. So we're used to that. We're used to having it, but we've had to drink it out of Chinette glasses, solo cups, Dixie cups, what have you, because it has to be for those large venues and non-glass venues that have to be disposable and fairly low priced. So my four goals with this product was to make it shatterproof, make it, goblet shape, so the shape of a stemless wine glass, because I can talk about that later, but that's really important to the experience of wine. But then also inexpensive. And then the other thing was stackable, because a goblet-shaped glass can only stack on top of itself. It can't stack within itself. So they just take up so much room at these places where space is often limited in some regard. So those are my four goals, and I've spent a year and a half trying to balance all these four things. You know, my price would go up if I tried to do this, or I'd lose the goblet shape if I did that. And so finally we've settled on what I call it, an angelic design, because it's basically a stemless wine glass that is two pieces. It snaps together for a watertight seal, and then it creates this halo effect around the center of a stemless wine glass. And what that does then is it allows it to stack, which is really beneficial, especially for stadiums or if you're your purse, if you're going to Jazz in the Park. Or I've got two models here. So this is the most recent one. It's two parts, and it really just snaps together, and then you got your stemless wine glass. And then what happens is they come off easily, and then they stack. I can basically stack 12 glasses in 12 inches. So here's...
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah.
So here's the big market player. I won't mention them, but they have a great stemless wine glass, but it costs $4, and it's shatterproof theirs. But if you stack two of theirs, I can fit 10 to 12 of mine in the same space that they have two. Also, I have pre-measured pour lines, which really are beneficial, not only to people at home, but mainly stadiums, so they can control pours.
When is this actually going to be available?
Well, it is available for pre-sale right now. I'm working on a crowdfunding website called Kickstarter, and we'll just be selling that along with a lot of the experiences that I've offered as a wine school. So people are signing up for wine tastings, and I'm going to have a free online wine school, and I'm really leveraging my experience as a wine educator with this new endeavor, and it's really to create a community around making wine fun and accessible. I mean, that's what I set out to do with the wine school. It was always my tone, my style. And I really just feel like this Halo Vino is just an extension of that. I'm just bringing wine, continuing to bring wine into places that are fun and making it more accessible. But I always felt like with my school and also this product, you know, what draws us to wine is something special about it. So I think that's why the glass becomes important. And not only for the aromas, which is why the shape is so important, but also for the feel of it. We really gravitate to wine, I think, for a lot of reasons, health reasons and taste, but also just for the feel of drinking wine. It slows us down. When you see wine being drunk, usually people just slow down a little bit more. That's what I loved about Spain, you know, to come full circle. I love that they took naps sometimes in the afternoon. I love that lunches would last 3 or 4 hours and you wouldn't even think an hour passed. And you don't know what you talked about, but you talked the whole time about nothing really, you know, and I love that.
And everything.
That. Exactly. So that, again, this is just kind of that extension of making wine fun, accessible, but keeping it special.
At the same time.
Yeah.
Jessica Bell, thanks so much.
Well, thanks so much, Bonnie. It was a pleasure.
Jessica Bell is the proprietor of My Wine School in Milwaukee and the startup Halo Vino, which this week completed a successful Kickstarter campaign and will also supply disposable wine glasses at venues such as Miller Park.
There's more information about both of her ventures and about her at wuwm.com.